We'll go ahead and switch over here to Randy as we get him set up. Randy is going to provide his perspective on outlook for wheat in the U.S. Randy's a professor and endowed chair in grain economics in the School of Economic Sciences at Washington State University. He previously was the Rink, I hope I pronounced that right, professorship of agribusiness, and was the director of the Rink Agribusiness Institute in the College of Ag and Life Sciences at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. In addition, Randy was the associate director of the Wisconsin Bioenergy Initiative. Research activities include price discovery and risk management in agriculture and energy markets, issues related to economics and bioenergy, and issues related to agricultural production and trade. And he serves as the director of research for Frontier Risk Management in Chicago, or has served in the past. Randy was at one time a student here at Montana State University and went on to get through the system and got his degree at North Carolina State University and was employed there. Randy, I think you're set up and ready to go. Whoops. Sorry, Randy. Degree is at University of Illinois and then went to North Carolina. So I'll let you take that away.
Okay, thanks very much, and good morning or good afternoon, depending on where you are. I'm going to talk just a few minutes about sort of the wheat market, and I'm kind of calling it a challenging environment. Last year and a half, things have been a little different in the wheat market relative to previous experience, and a lot of it's tied to the same things Ed was talking about in terms of especially the corn market, but the other commodities as well. I have a balance sheet here similar to Ed. It's got a little bit more information on it. I just want you to pay attention to three things on here that we're going to come back to as we go forward. And that's really the bottom lines. The ending stocks, 825 million bushels. Now, for wheat, of course, the marketing year ends June 30th. So that's how much we think we'll have left over at the end of June going into the 2011-2012 harvest. The stocks to use, similar to that graph Ed just showed you for soybeans, is about 38%. And as you look back across previous years, the last couple of years it's been pretty high, but that's a big number relative to the early parts of the 2000s. Associated with that, though, is this very high farm price of about $7.30 a bushel that USDA is projecting. Generally, we would look at those two things and think maybe they don't make sense, that we have relatively high stocks to use, a significant amount of wheat left over relative to consumption, and at the same time, a very high price. But it's partly because we are really connected to the corn market for wheat this last year and a half, and that's part of what's driving this price. But I want you to remember those numbers because I'm going to give you a little bit of caution going forward about whether those are really achievable and what it might mean if they're not. This is just a picture of wheat, corn, and soybean prices over the last decade, and what I want you to notice is wheat had a pretty consistent premium over corn up until early 2010, and then as the wheat price really started to correct from that near $10 mark, this is for all wheat in the cash market, all varieties, we came down and hit the corn price, and then for the last year and a half, we've really traded with corn. As corn moves up, wheat prices move up, corn moves down, wheat prices move down. They've really become integrated. This is important because if you think about the dynamics that Ed described, a relatively tight corn market, even with a good planting season, potential for carryout to remain relatively tight next year. Contrast that with a wheat market where worldwide we're going to have probably a record carryout this year, and in the U.S. certainly an increase in carryout over a year ago, relatively large stocks to use. What does that mean for price? I want to talk about two things, though, related to the price, not just the price level, but the volatility. A lot of arguments that biofuels production has driven up commodity prices. We know that's true for corn. We might debate whether it explains $5 corn or $7 corn, but we know that it certainly has resulted in corn prices being significantly higher than they were before 2008. But what about volatility? Volatility generally is driven by uncertainty. And if you go back and look at the monthly balance sheets USDA puts out with the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates, you'll see very little change from month to month in expected ethanol use of corn. What does change is exports oftentimes, sometimes the feed demand changes, some of the other demand use categories. So while ethanol might contribute to higher prices, certainly has contributed to higher prices, and that has impacted the wheat market, I don't think it really explains to a large degree the volatility we've seen over the last 4 or 5 years. So this other dynamics in these markets that are affecting both perceptions of risk and then the strategies somebody might use to manage risk going forward. This picture just shows you, again, going back over 30 years now, or 20 years, the convergence of wheat and corn prices as we've moved into the last year and a half. I want to bring this out because, and Ed pointed this out too, this coming year, this year that we're currently in, about halfway through, as Ed pointed out, and next year are the first 2 years where we expect to see year-over-year decreases in corn consumption for ethanol production. What that does mean is, even if you think ethanol explains the current price level, and wheat is linked to the current corn price level, we've probably flattened out, at least over the next two crop prices, will be critical in determining whether we go further along increasing ethanol production and therefore increasing demand for corn. But for the next two marketing years, I think we're really going to see a flattening out. So what that does mean is, whatever the ride was ethanol gave us to higher prices, we probably have sort of reached the end of that. It's become a mature market. So we probably don't want to expect ethanol production to take us to even higher price levels relative to where we are now. Another volatility perception, it's speculative activity in the derivatives that's driving increased volatility in prices. I want to show you, this is kind of a busy graph, but we'll go through it quickly. You'll notice that the sort of the gold line, I call that speculator's net position. What that is, every week, I'm looking at the total long positions of large reportable non-commercial traders minus their short positions. So for hedgers, it's the same thing. Their long position for commercial reportable traders minus their short position, and then we're marking out on the price on the right axis. So there's a lot of busyness here, but if you look from 1999 up through early 2007, where we really saw commodity prices take off, both increased volatility, increased price levels, there doesn't seem to be much correlation between who's long, who's short, and where the price is actually going. But we start to see a lot more correlation between the price of wheat and the net futures positions of these large speculators from 2007 forward. But there's one interesting thing to note. In the we've read a lot, of course, about long index funds, the long funds driving both price levels and volatility. But if you look at wheat, this is from 2007 to 2011, notice that for most of this period, the large speculators in the wheat market were short, not long. Now, the price still seems to track their positions. If you look from July 29th of 2010, when they start to become less short and eventually become net long, the price sort of tracks their market position. But it's not like these large funds have been long wheat through these periods where they were long oil, long soybeans, and oftentimes long corn. They've had different positions in the wheat market. That's important because as we think about potential policy solutions, if you want to call them solutions, to price volatility and or derivative market action, it turns out that one size doesn't fit all. The positions in these markets vary by different commodity across traders. And in fact, this chart shows you total open interest. So this is all the positions in the market at the close of each trading day and just speculator open interest. And you'll notice that as the markets have increased volatility in wheat, the speculators have become a smaller percentage of the market, not a larger percentage. That goes against much of the conventional wisdom we read about suggesting that the problems in price dynamics stimulates from speculative activity in the market, and I'm actually taking a larger market share relative to a smaller market share. Again, this graph now from 2007 forward just shows speculator open interest relative to wheat price, and we do see a relationship, though, as the speculators' positions increase, become more net long, the price seems to respond. One more way to look at that, this is the net position, so longs minus shorts again, a little bit of a relationship. The third thing that often is used to explain the current volatility in the market are international events. Some of the macro events that Ed talked about earlier, in other words, things outside of the control of the individual market participants are actually driving volatility. One thing we certainly know, and wheat, this is very important because it's a very important export crop, and in fact, much of the wheat grown here in the northeast part of Washington, probably 75 or 80% of it goes to the export market. As the value of the dollar does decrease, the price responds in a positive way, as we would expect, and this shows us over the last 6 years a strong relationship between volatility and price levels in the market and the value of the dollar. So all of those things matter. But what has tended to happen is we focused on those three things, biofuels, speculative activity and derivatives, international events, and we've assumed that the fundamentals don't matter like they once did. And maybe that explains why we can have in the balance sheet a high price expectation, even with a very high stocks to use ratio based on historical patterns. One of the things I want to argue is that's really not true, but what has happened is the commodity grain markets especially have become more integrated than they were before, and the dynamics driving one market now influence the other markets to a greater extent than they possibly did. And one way to think about that is pricing wheat as a feed grain. Now, if you go back and look at the balance sheet, we were only expected to feed 145 million bushels of wheat this year, which is less than we have sometimes fed in the past. But because corn is high priced, on the margin, wheat's always being looked at as a potential substitute into the ration. And what that does mean is it doesn't take big changes in the demand on the corn balance sheet for people to start thinking maybe wheat becomes a more viable feed alternative. What this picture shows you from 2004-05 forward is sort of the wheat fed in millions of bushels relative to the wheat price. And if you look at 2011-2012, we're suddenly distancing ourselves from that relationship. In other words, we have this very high $7.20 expected farm price from USDA with feed demand being relatively constant over the last 2 or 3 years. So we're starting to separate. If we really believe the $7.20, we have to believe one of two things. Either corn prices are going to go significantly higher, maybe they will, or wheat is now starting to separate itself from the demand market for feed. I actually don't think that's a reasonable bet. Here's the prices from 2006 forward, corn versus all wheat, and you'll see that through last week we're still tracking right on top of the corn price. Now we have started to see some separations by variety. For example, white wheat in Northeast Washington has gone from about a 50 to 60 cent negative basis, cash price 60 to cents below soft red winter wheat in Chicago, to about a 50 cent positive basis. So the basis itself has moved by a dollar or so, but overall, soft red winter wheat prices on the board still are tracking very closely to corn prices. If you think about that, and remember, Ed had a bit of a positive picture on the balance sheet looking forward, part of it based on production, smaller expected yield than USDA suggested last month. But here's a couple of things to think about from the feed demand side. Cattle numbers are at their lowest level in 60 years, according to the cattle on feed report we got a couple of months ago. Dairy margins tend to be appear to be stressed, and corn feed demand was projected to be down before the January cattle on feed report, 5% relative to a year ago. So we have a situation where the supply side is somewhat questionable in terms of whether we can really do 164 bushels an acre, but we think ethanol demand will go down this year for corn. We think feed demand might be down relative to a year ago, and to the extent that wheat prices are tied to corn prices, we'd want to be careful about assuming wheat has a lot of upside potential left in it given the current feed demand for the corn market. Here's July wheat futures prices from May 2005 through a couple of weeks ago. And what it looks to me like is over the last 2 years, we've really settled into a trading range of about $6 to $8. So we have a couple times we've been above $8, maybe once in that trading range below $8 from 2010 forward, but really a $6 to $8 trading range. From that perspective, the $7.20 forecast for cash prices is pretty much in the middle of this range, assuming a basis of just 10 or 15 cents, which is about where soft red winter wheat basis seems to be trading now in the Midwest. Here's July wheat futures prices. So this is the harvest contract for all of our winter wheats. And again, we sort of see that $6 to $8 trading range with a couple of extremes on each side of it. $7.20 maybe fits in there. But what's really important to remember, as we look at this trading range from 2010 through 2011, this is the period we've been tracking corn prices almost penny for penny, or at least dime for dime. These are cash prices of white wheat in Ritzville, Washington, over the last several years. Again, we see that the price level has become much significantly higher than it was before, $6 to $8 as opposed to $3 to $4. Also, a lot more price volatility. This is an important diagram, though, because as I've talked to wheat farmers in Washington, one of the things that they remember is $12 wheat or even $10 wheat, and there's a lot of reluctance to accept $8 wheat because we might go back to $10 or $12. That was really an anomaly. And when we start thinking about marketing strategies, it becomes important in my mind to sort of throw out some of these extremes while they're possibilities. They tend to not have very high probabilities associated with them. They're not highly probable. And the other thing is they don't last very long. When we run up fast, we run down fast as well. So the overall story is that while prices could go back to the levels we saw in 2008, it's probably a relatively risky bet to sit on the sidelines waiting for that to happen. Here's a more condensed version, a shorter timeline. This is just from the summer of 2008, took out that big extreme, and now we see that $6 to $8 is a pretty good price, and in fact, there's times where we've been well below that over the last two or three marketing years. So what does that kind of mean? Well, right now, USDA farm level prices for wheat are projected to be quite strong, and I would argue that they're very strong given the balance sheet bottom line, which is the stocks-to-use ratio and the overall carryout. World ending stocks are going to increase relative to last year, it looks like, be a record level, actually. It appears to me that over the last two or three months, speculative trading has cooled off a little bit, but this may be a short-run phenomenon. Why does that matter? If you really believe it was speculators that took us to those $10 and $12 prices earlier, if they're not there, then it has to be something more extreme than just their trading activity to get us there again. I think corn prices face some downside risk as ethanol feed demand and exports all weaken as we go into next year. Now, this assumes that the supply side of the balance sheet, as Ed pointed out, matches USDA's expectations, and maybe it doesn't. In my mind, when I look at the cash markets for both corn and wheat, I see two things. In the wheat market, basis is very strong, it appears, nationwide. And I think what that suggests is that the cash market believes that maybe USDA has underestimated the demand for wheat, and that's what's being traded in the futures market. In other words, futures traders are focused on the USDA balance sheet. Cash traders seem to be thinking maybe the demand side of that sheet is overly pessimistic and we can have some demand strengthening. If they're right, then we can certainly see some improvement in price as that plays itself out. On the corn side, I think there's a lot of people out there that believe, even for this marketing year, which we're halfway through, that stocks have been overstated. And we'll get another stocks report on March 29th, the quarterly stocks report. If, in fact, that ends up being true, then corn has some upside as well, and it can take wheat with it. What I would want to caution, though, is betting on either one of those events, sort of a confirmation that USDA has their numbers wrong, in the face of some of these other things we do know. It looks like world stocks for wheat will be up. U.S. stocks for wheat will be up. We are projecting a very high price for the given stocks-to-use ratio, and in my mind, that just suggests some caution in terms of thinking about marketing strategies going forward. Let me stop there, and we'll see if there's any questions we need to handle.
Thank you, Randy. A good presentation. I enjoyed that. I had a hard time keeping up writing all the notes. Questions, though, that come in. One of the questions I have is you talked about a volatility and possible activities that created that volatility quite a bit. Could you give us a measure of how do we measure the volatility in the market in terms of, say, dollars per bushel? Would you risk a measurement of that volatility?
I'm not exactly sure what you're asking me. Are you asking me to predict the price change over some period of time going forward? Is that what you mean, or
what? Well, yeah. What in terms of the volatility we have with respect to speculators? What size of the volatility have they introduced into the market?
I actually believe that their influence in the wheat market has been grossly overstated, and in fact, that's kind of what the one chart shows, where as you look at total wheat open interest increasing significantly, the speculators' positions over the last 3 years really haven't. So they have reflected a smaller and smaller market share of total futures trading in the wheat market over the last 2 or 3 years as total open interest has grown. That's not true in other markets, and that's why I sort of said these policies that sort of assume a one-size-fits-all in terms of managing either position limits or other ways to try to manage speculative activity are not going to have the desired effects in some markets that they might have in other markets. And wheat's one where I don't think, now I haven't done any empirical work on this, but I actually don't believe that the volatility can be explained by speculative money moving in and out of the market. That doesn't mean on a given day or a given couple of days, if a lot of money moves in or out, we don't see the price moving at the same time. But as I look at volatility longer term, wild price swings over 2, 3, 4 month periods, it's hard for me to assign that to speculative activity in this particular market.
Okay. One more quick question. And it's a little bit of a follow-on to that one. Do you think the speculators are in the wheat market more domestic or foreign, and is there a differential impact in those speculators?
That's a good question. So this is blind speculation on my part because I don't know. I haven't looked. My guess is in the wheat market they tend to be more domestic. Does it matter? I don't think it matters in terms of the price action. What matters is how much money's moving at any given moment in time. So I don't think it matters whether they are offshore or not offshore. I'm guessing, though, in the wheat market, most of the speculative activity, and we're just looking at the Chicago market here, but I think most of that speculative activity is coming from domestic speculative traders.
Okay, thank you.